Voices of Hope is a podcast of New Hope Presbyterian Church in Castle Rock, Colorado. New Hope is a church that puts people first. You can listen to our sermons and podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and any popular podcasting platforms. This week, Pastor Russ brings us a sermon titled, Spiritual or Religious, from Luke 6, 1 through 16.
So I have a question. Are you spiritual or are you religious? Have you had that question posed, or how maybe you've introduced yourself? I'm not really very religious. I'm more spiritual. Yeah. For the record, I have never known anyone who introduced themselves the other way. I don't know anyone who says, you know what, really, I'm just religious and not very spiritual. Because there is something about that word religious that has heavy connotations, even as the word spiritual does. Spiritual people we think of as being open and full of wonder and accepting and gracious and spirit-filled. Religious people, on the other hand, are spiritless. They are rigid, they're closed, and they're judgmental. Spiritual people are not judgmental, except when it comes to people who are religious. There is something about being religious that we want to avoid, and yet, let me just pose this. If you're seeing this, you are watching a worship service online, so we are all kind of at least a little bit religious. And the question is how do we be both? And maybe we think of ourselves as kind of religious, but we have our fingers crossed behind our back, or we have one foot out the door. But in either case, it is something that we struggle with. How do we reconcile this? And more than reconcile, how do we live our life in such a way that we are open to and more able to recognize and respond to God? If you've ever asked that question, then this passage this morning is for you. Because it is in this passage that Jesus addresses these very questions. This is not a new problem. This is a very old problem. This is a problem for Jesus in his day. This is what he's addressing in our passage when he is talking about the Sabbath. He is taking the issue of the Sabbath to talk about religion in general, the perils, the possibilities of it, and how is it something, again, that we can find as a way to renew and open and to give the life it was meant to. The story we have has two instances of Sabbath and two encounters. The Sabbath was very important to the Jews in those days and today. It is considered part of what the distinctive practice that defines, it's sort of the outer boundary that people will follow, use that as we are on the inside of how we practice Sabbath. In those days in the nation of Israel, followed and aligned themselves with Julius Caesar. And because of that, they had a favored nation status, which meant, among other things, is they did not have to give soldiers to the army. And it's not because they were pacifist, but it's because by being part of the army, they would have had to break the Sabbath. And so they didn't have to contribute members to the army. It was part of this gift that God had given them. This is what defined them. On the 6 days God creates the world, on the seventh day God rests. That's the Sabbath. That's what you shall do. It is also an obligation. As this gift, it was, we need to create this world where God is welcomed. And in those days, they were waiting a Messiah. And there was one saying back then that stipulated that if the nation could just keep the Sabbath, two Sabbaths pure in a row, then the Messiah would come. And so for Jesus to come and to challenge them on the Sabbath, not only disqualified him as the Messiah, it also raised the issue that maybe he is the actual enemy of all that is good and right. Jesus is using this example of something that is core and central to the practice to talk about how it is that we relate to God in general. How do we relate with our religion? Because the Sabbath was just one part of all those practices, sometimes referred to as that system of believing, behaving, and belonging. That's what our religion is. It's a way of sort of framing and making consistent how it is that we encounter God. How do we encounter the divine? And in some ways, it helps me to think about it as sort of as a threshold. There are these threshold, thin place experiences, these openings in our everyday life, and we have this encounter, and now we want to come back. And so we begin to frame that as a doorway so that it is consistent and it is communal. These are the places we come back to. This is where we have come to expect to encounter God. And so maybe it's an anniversary of the exile and or the Passover, or maybe for us it's Christmas or Easter, or maybe it is the practice itself where we remind ourselves who we are, what we're about, who God is, what God's still doing, who God would have us be. That's our Sabbath practice. That's why we're doing this in worship. It becomes this threshold experience where we come and we have come to recognize this is how we do this. This is what makes us us. But the problem with those doorways is that after a while, because we're people, we begin to focus more on the door rather than its function. We make these rather elaborate thresholds and we embellish them with our doctrines and our traditions and all those things that by themselves aren't bad, but when they become more the point than the function of how is that we use them now to encounter God, then they become like these massive closed doors. And I'll bet you've had an experience, I know I have, with coming to a place where you were hoping to have an encounter with God, a spiritual experience where you were met only with religion, and it had this effect of a massive door that was just closed. You weren't welcomed. What you encountered was the doorkeepers. The doorkeepers are the ones who decide who gets in and who doesn't get in, who's welcome and who's not. And if you don't have the same beliefs, behaving, and belonging, then you are definitely not welcome. You might even be seen as a threat. There's a woman named Sharon Bruce. Sharon Bruce did a TED Talk about 8-9 years ago. A friend reminded me of that not long ago, went back and revisited it. Wonderful video. In fact, if you want to watch it yourself, I'll have the information at the end of the service for you. Click it. It's worth the 16 or 17 minutes. And in this, she talks about the perils of religion. And she talks about it in two ways, that there's two perils where religion becomes dangerous. It becomes destructive. What we talk about is toxic. And it happens when religion is religious extremism on one hand, and we're all very aware of all the different ways that people have used religion to hurt and destroy one another. John Stewart, who I think has the statement about, religion provides hope in a world that it's torn apart by religion. Religious extremism. But on the other hand, there's also the peril and the danger of religious routinism, where we just go through the habits, we go through the motions, and we do it without any heart, we do it without any soul, we just go through motions, and the door is just as closed, just as thick, just as unavailable, and it misses the point. It's usually religious extremism or religious routinism we're thinking about when we say, I'm not religious, I'm just spiritual. And that's really what Jesus was encountering this day when he asked this simple question, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath? And even 2,000 years later in a different culture, we understand that's more than a simple question, that becomes this scathing indictment of the door that the Sabbath had become in those days. That somehow it had become this thing that was meant to frame and to say, this is who we are, this is how we encounter God. It had become the closed door to even someone who was hurting, who was sick. And it was getting in the way of giving the compassion, which is the core value of the God who created it. Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath, he asks. And because he doesn't want to give it too much time, and then he goes ahead and heals the man and proves to everyone around him, at least as far as they're concerned, that he is in fact part of the problem. He is now the danger. And it is in this that this gift has now become the obstacle. And before we just wag the finger at those people 2,000 years ago, before we wag it even at the people in our own time who have presented and locked the door, may I ask, maybe it would be more helpful to just ask, when have we done the same? When have what we did or not done become an obstacle? When have we done things that have not only closed us off from God, but then God from other people? While you're thinking about that, let me just remind that there is this passage in the book of Revelation that says, you know, Jesus says, "Behold, I stand at the door and I knock. If anyone hears my voice and answers, I will come in and I will sup and dine, be with them and they with me." And it is often used in evangelism for people who supposedly don't know God. And it's fine in that context, but let's never forget that the original intent was aimed at a church. It was aimed at religious people who had grown so cold, so lukewarm to God and the things of God, that God found himself on the other side of the door, and that door was so thick and so impenetrable that not even God could come through, and not just for them, but then for their community. May I suggest that before we talk about how it is that we can reclaim and find the ways to open up this threshold again of who God is and what God is trying to do, that we first pause and reflect where we have been the problem ourselves. One of the ways we do that is with a prayer, and a prayer of confession. I'm going to ask that you pause with me and perhaps let these words become our words together. We have been tried and found wanting, O God. We've been tested and failed. We have not loved you with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. We have not loved our neighbor as ourselves. And so for those times when we have not been a source of love for others, for those times when in fact we have been an obstacle, whether in our passionate exclusions or our half-hearted expressions, have mercy and forgive, O God. Help us to hear your voice again, to open, to expect, to receive, and then be a source. Be a source of life that renews, refreshes. Be the source of life, abundant, once again, in the name of your Son, in whose name we pray. Amen. Thank you. For all of us who don't want to be religious and want to be spiritual, there's a couple options. One is we can point to all those people who've done it wrong. There's the other time when we can option of deciding walk away. I just won't have anything to do with it anymore. But there is a third way. And the third way is to somehow reclaim those things and reclaim that threshold, reclaim that door so that once again, it becomes more and more of that portal, more and more of that opening, more and more of that place of meeting God and finding renewed life and revigorating and rejuvenating who we are. Jesus asked the question, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath? And that was the first indicting question. Actually, it was the second, because the first one in the story just before was this statement of, haven't you read? And again, it sounds like a simple statement, but boy, is he throwing shade with that comment. It's a little bit like asking a Supreme Court justice, have you not read the Constitution? And it's obviously the issue is not knowledge for a group of people who spend their whole time reading and examining. It has to do with, did you miss the point? Did you miss the point of what God was trying to do when God gave us the Sabbath in the first place? Did you miss the point of what all this is that we call religion is supposed to do? How do you know, and how can you reclaim what all this is? How can you find your way again? And Jesus shows it in this story, and it poses for us in 2021. So how will we take this gift and this obligation, this threshold that we have been entrusted with, and all the different things that we have been given, how will we do those, and how will we find our way? And then maybe for us, it comes back to some of the things that we already know. Back in the day when we could meet together, remember that? And we would go down to Fellowship Hall, and there would be in Fellowship Hall these banners. And one of those banners has to do with the values. And one of those values that makes us said, we put people first. How do we know? How do we know if we are in sync with what God is trying to do? Is we are always at our best when we put people first. That becomes the litmus test, because the reason we say that is because we think Jesus put people first. And the reason we think that is because of stories like this one. And we believe that Jesus didn't come and live and teach and then die and then rise again for the sake of a tradition or the sake of a doctrine or a dogma or the sake of a budget or the sake of a program. Jesus didn't die for any of those things. Jesus didn't come for any of those things. Jesus came for people. Jesus put people first in this passage and throughout his entire ministry. So maybe that's what we should do too. We get to reclaim the purpose of why we do what we do. And if we reclaim it and do that well, then maybe, just maybe, then we get to experience what all this was about in the first place. This is what Jesus keeps posing. This is what Jesus poses with Sabbath. In this particular point, in this passage, he's talking about the Sabbath and this Sabbath as a gift. And in the 20th century, there was this wonderful Jewish theologian named Abraham Heschel. And he wrote a book called Sabbath. And I remember the first time I read it, I still haven't gotten over it. It's like the lights went on. It's like, oh my goodness, I had no idea. When he talks about, here's the whole point of Sabbath. And he talks about, it has to do with reclaiming who we are as humans. And this is a great gift of God. And he says this, the higher goal of the spiritual living is not to amass a wealth of information, but to face sacred moments. Did you get that? To face sacred moments, to be at that threshold, to be at that portal. That's the whole point, is to somehow experience that and make sense of that and let it make sense of us. The spiritual life begins to decay when we fail to sense the grandeur of what is eternal in time. When we get so distracted by all the things of life, all the things we do and all the things we amass, and we miss the whole purpose of life, something inside dies. And what is it that will help reclaim that? The Sabbath, he says. The Sabbath. It is this great gift where we get to stop and pause and savor. And you and I probably have experiences of Sabbath of all the things we can't do. But underneath all that is what we get to do by saying no to all those other things, that we get to savor what life is about, what you and I are about. And whether we want to go back to those things, I don't. But even as I don't want to do that, doesn't mean there aren't other things that I need to do, that we need to do together, so that we can tend to the holy and the sacred that is in us and that is in this world. And how will we do that? Because what religion in general, what the Sabbath in particular, is saying, there is more to life than just the doings of life, just the busyness of the schedule, just the here and the now. And in fact, you can't make sense of the here and the now unless you have connected that there is something on the other side of this wall that we have constructed, that there really is something over there. And in fact, over there is what's already here. But if we can't see it, and how do we see it if we don't take time and to nurture that vision together? Religion in general, Sabbath in particular, is meant to be a practice and a set of things that we do and don't do so that we get to reclaim the holiness of our own existence, the sacredness of this world, the extraordinary extravagance of life and what it can be, and not only me, but for you and what this world could be together. That's what happens when religion is done well, where we get to refocus and renew and restore, where it is a gift that is needed maybe now more than ever. In the middle of a pandemic, wouldn't it be wonderful to have this set of practices and the set of gatherings and what we do, whether we're in the same room or not, to help renew and restore our life, to help refresh our vision of what we are and who we could be? Can you imagine that? No, really, can you imagine that? Can you imagine what our life would be like together? Can you imagine what our world would be like together if we were able to find those places in the dry times and the good times that acted as portals, that acted as openings, where our life had renewed meaning and value and purpose? I'm going to invite you to do just that. Can you imagine the difference that be in this world if we could open up and keep open such places, far from people trying to stay away? We couldn't keep people away, and we'd be first in line. Take a moment and imagine what it means that there is more to this world, there is more to you than just what you do and achieve and accomplish and earn. And what does that do to your heart? And what might we have to offer this world? If there ever was a sermon that needed a next step, it's this one. It's not enough to just say imagine. Just go and try to reclaim the good things and what it means to stand at a portal and what God is trying to do in our life. It needs a next step. I mean, all of worship needs next steps. It's never meant to just impact our brain cells. It was always meant to somehow demand a response at what God is doing, so we actually get to step through those portals. And this week I have something very simple, and it's going to have to do with this QR code that's right here. And whether throughout the rest of the sermon or whether at the end of the service you want to follow it, or that we'll find other links, I invite you to go on it, because it's going to take you to a single document that just says, this I can do. Here's the next step. I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to challenge us together to go to this and to commit ourselves in this next week to do one thing, just one thing, more than we normally would. And it has to be less than an hour. We're not trying to load people up. But just in less than an hour, what's one thing that you can do that's going to bless this world, that's going to help other people, that's going to make a difference for either the people around us or something we believe in? And it has some possibilities. We can write notes and text somebody, write a card, drop that to them, make a call. We could shovel someone's driveway if there's still snow out there. We could bring a meal. We could do something anonymous and help people that way. There's all kinds of ways. We could give a contribution to our favorite organization. We could do all kinds of things. And at first it might not seem like that's very much. But if you multiply that one act by all the people who are going to watch this, it begins to add up. And I know that we're weary, and I know there's a part of it that's like, oh, I just can't think of one more thing. And I get that, but maybe even in that time, or maybe especially in this time, what a great gift this would be. What a wonderful way of opening up what has been a closed door to become an open portal, is by each of us taking one step. We are so used to right now all the things we can't do. Why not focus this week on one thing we can? Now, I'm going to do this 2 weeks in a row. I'd love to see, and I'll report back at the end of next week, how many people clicked it and said, yeah, count me in. And there's even a place if you want to, it's not mandatory, but you can either say, this is what I did do or what I intend to do. But even if you don't do that, just click the box and let's just see how many people will take the next step. How many people will take this thing, this experience, this practice of worship, and translate it into something that is truly life-giving and renewing? It is a very expression of what it is that we are about and how we send ourselves out, because in every one of those things, it will have to do with love. In every one of those things, it will be an expression of how it is that we are to love God with everything we've got, heart, soul, mind, and strength. In every one of these expressions, it will further the cause of how is it that we love our neighbor as ourselves. So, as you go out this week, may the God of hope fill you in all joy and peace. May your heart abound with hope through the power of the Holy Spirit, now and forever. Amen. So as you go this week, go in peace. May the peace of Christ, of what is, what is yet to be, what is here now, may that peace of Christ be with you. Go in peace.
Thank you for listening to Voices of Hope. If you have enjoyed our podcast, please rate and review it and share it with your friends. Go in peace.